Psalm 46, the title for today is Don't Lose Your Faith. I thought that's a pretty good one to end with. Don't lose your faith. We are in a season of life in the world here today where there are people that are talking about walking away from God, losing their faith, or they're just not too sure who is God, what's this all about. And I want to encourage you that there's a way that you can be so sure about your faith that you don't lose your faith, that you don't lose that understanding of who God is, because there are so many difficulties that we go through today. If I just back up and talk about the Psalms again, the Psalms, 150 of them were really songs. These are songs. These are musicians. These are lyricists, people that wrote these songs, and they talk about life. They talk about real life, what they went through in tribulations and trials. You read some of these Psalms, they are about betrayals. You read some of these Psalms, these are about guys that have, David writes out of Psalm 51, I think it's 32, and out of his adultery and out of his failure and how he fell, and he called out to God for forgiveness, and God brought right relationship and reconciliation, and David was able to move on with the forgiveness of God. We read some of these Psalms, and they're strictly about the celebration of God and how great God is and how faithful God was. And these are songs that are written not just for them, but God takes this collection of songs and he pulls them together for you and I to read. So as we read them, we go, hey, that's me. That's what I'm going through right now. And there's so many of the Psalms become a song in our heart where we identify and we say, thank you that somebody else knows what I went through. I encourage you, read the Psalms, sing the Psalms, make it become a song in your heart. And today we're looking at Psalm 46. It's one that, as I look at it today as we close out this series, I thought, this is relevant for today. There is so much relevance for the culture today, for you and I today, and the embattlements that are happening in the faith realm, in the spiritual realm, that we see that, man, too many people are putting what should be private discussions in their own heart on the public Facebook situation and turmoil and discussion and criticism and all these other things happening where people are reading and they go, well, what is God then? Who is God then? What's happening with all these things? And I look at Psalm 46 and I see that there are a heart that's going through some struggles and trials but comes up with an answer, comes up with how not to lose your faith. How not to, recently there are some authors and some musicians that make it public that they themselves have walked away from God and they try to explain why they've left God and what their reasoning is and all these things. And I just felt that there's a word in here for you and I. As we look at Psalm 46, a psalm that is, when you hear the background to it, people going through some dark times, some hard times, and some of you are going through some dark times. Some of you are going through some hard times, difficult times. You're going through some times that you're alone right now. You say, well, yeah, there's everybody around you, but really there's loneliness. There's hurt. There's bitterness. There's criticism. There's things in your life that you're trying to deal with, and I really feel that this one would help all of us. Let me give you a little background as we look at this psalm. The psalm's written by, it says, the sons of Korah. If you look at your title, often underneath it is an inscription. And it says it's written by the sons of Korah. Now, Korah was Moses' cousin. And you read back in Exodus, in the books of Numbers, you find that Korah and a couple other malcontents, they're part of the priesthood, they said to Moses, Moses, hey, you shouldn't be the only one that hears from God. You shouldn't be the only one that is leading. And they started to have a little uprising against Moses, and who was God's chosen leader to lead God's people out of Egypt and bring them into the promised land. And these malcontents were foaming at the mouth against Moses. And how many know when you criticize God's leaders in the biblical realm that you're criticizing God because God made them leaders? So God looked at Korah and the others, and God says, I got to deal with this. I got to set an example. And God comes and pulls this man, Korah, and his family, and judgment comes up. And really, it's a severe judgment. Ultimately, they die. And God laid out this judgment that a lot of people sit back and go, what's up? God, you're judging. What's up with this? I thought you're just a loving God. And the children of Korah, the grandchildren, great-grandchildren, and great-great-great-grandchildren, we get up to the day of this time, and we find that God's grace went on the next generation. and the next generation, the grace of God, the mercies of God, the goodness of God, did not stop because of this man Korah and what he did. God continued to show his heart towards the sons till ultimately, in this time period, we've got a musician, a lyricist, we got somebody writing a song about the goodness of God. When there could have been this bitterness that says, yeah, I'm not going to sing about God because look what God did. Look how God judged. Look how God did something painful. And he didn't have to do this. He could have just let them off, but instead he killed them and he judged them. And they didn't write a song about how bad God was. There's 11 psalms written by the sons of Korah. That not one of them is about the negativeness about God, about how God did this or how God did that or how God shouldn't have done this or done. There's no reasoning in their own minds and trying to say, well, God shouldn't have done this. Instead, we get songs like Song 42, verse 1, as the deer pants after the water brook, so my heart pants after you. They become songs of longing. They don't become reflections of the negative. They say, no, we're going to press in. They're leaning into God in these songs. The sons of Korah write Song 84, verse 1, how lovely is your dwelling place, O God. God did this to my family. I'm not going to turn to God. No, the sons of Korah, they says, you know, we'll press in. We'll pursue after. We will talk about the graciousness and the goodness and the kindness of God. We will give our lives and build our faith towards him, not away from him. Their songs aren't of bitterness and anger towards God. They are longing for him. And I look at Psalm 46, and I believe Psalm 46 is really a call to every one of us. Don't lose your faith. I don't think there's any one of us right now that hasn't had something happen in your life that you could point to and say, well, God, you didn't, therefore I shouldn't. But instead, God's calling us to build our faith, to rise above and see God through our circumstances. They could have called and told by others, give up on God. Instead of walking away, they ran for God. And it's with humility, I believe, that we're able to read Psalm 46, verse 1, and throughout verse 11. And we're going to go to the very beginning here. God is our refuge and our strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear, even though the earth be removed and though the mountains be carried into the midst of the sea, though its waters roar and be troubled, though the mountains shake with its swelling. That word selah means contemplate, stop, think. Let the words sink in. Don't just skip by. There is a river whose streams make glad the city of God, the holy place of the tabernacle of the Most High. God is in the midst of her. She shall not be moved. God shall help her. Just at the break of dawn, the nations raged. The kingdoms were moved. He uttered his voice. The earth melted. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. Come, behold the works of the Lord, who has made desolations in the earth. He makes wars to cease. Wars cease to the ends of the earth. He breaks the bow and cuts the spear in two. He burns the chariot in fire. Be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. Selah, think on this. Consider it. I'm going to break this psalm down just into three pairings of words. The three pairings of the words, I believe, have become the understanding of this psalm, but also a life passage of or a life system of words. That if we just get these words alone, that it'll sink into our hearts, but we're going to talk about them. These are the six words. First of all, it's God is, be still, know God. God is, be still, know God. Keeping things simple often is the best way to go. And I think right at the very beginning is simply God is. I love how he writes out and he says, God is. He doesn't take a negative perception about what God isn't. God didn't. He says simply God is. And I believe how we don't lose our faith is we come to an understanding of who God is, but because of who God is, not who we want him to be. And too often our expectations are what let us down because we put on God what God hasn't put on himself. And the world today is trying to form and fashion God in what they think is the right image. It's like we know that God made us in his image. It's like we return the favor and say, well, we'll make you in our image. But God says, no, this is who I am. And we pick up this passage and we say, no, God is. God is who he says he is. God is who he's, what he says he'll do. God is. And the Psalm's about this believer's faith that even when things aren't going well, we can still say God is. If you were to finish the sentence, how would you fill in the blank? God is late. God is distant. God is only about playing favorites. God is what? To you. Because how we respond to that question will determine our faith, will determine the security of our faith, the confidence of our faith, the understanding of who God is helps hold our faith together. Here he simply says, God is our refuge, a refuge and a strength. When problems come, when difficulties come, do we stand and complain about who God isn't, or we say who God is and helps that get us through our difficulties? People who complain about what God isn't, they become jaded and critical. They become the ones that gather another group together and say, well, God's not this, therefore let's move over this way. But those who can say God is become centered. They become grounded. They become solid in their community, in their grouping of people. They knew who God is. You think of these sons of Korah where they could have turned their back on God because God turned your back on me. That's the way they see it. No. Instead, they are pursuing God. People that will say, you know, well, God is on a negative side, they end up, well, God turns his back on me, I'll turn my back on them, I'll stop going to church, I'll stop praying, I'll stop being in a community, I'll stop serving. But the sons of Korah said, no, we're not going to turn our back on God, we're going to press into him. When our trials come and our hurts come and our pains come, instead of turning our back on God, that's where we need to press into. We need to find out who God is because God is all that we need. In the world today, I was watching the news here just a little while ago, and you know, we got these typhoons and hurricanes, and we got cyclones, and we got these weather conditions that are coming in, and we got these floodings that are happening. We got the waves. We got the turmoil. We got destructions happening. And what do people do when this happens? They run for refuge. They run to higher ground. They run to a place of protection. They run to a place where they can find security. They could stand and they could shake their hand at the wind. They could shake their hand at the hurricane. They could complain about things. But if they don't run to refuge, they're going to be in trouble. And God calls us to run for refuge. Not say, well, God, you could have stopped this. You could have done this. You could have done that. You could have protected this. Now I've lost my job. I lost my home. I've lost everything. No, no, I'll run into God because God is. And when he comes with difficulties come, we find that God becomes a source of strength. I have my grandkids here running around somewhere. But when I'm trying to do something, they say, hey, Papa, can we help? Papa, can we help? I go, oh, of course you can help. And we're trying to maneuver a box up the stairs or into the kitchen or somewhere. And they want to help, right? So they grab the end of the box, and well, they're not really holding it. I'm still holding it, but they're guiding it and banging into walls. And you know, all of a sudden it's a little awkward, and it's go, thanks, Lennox, thanks Slater for helping me. You know, thanks for your help. I did more work trying to hold the box than really they did. But when God helps, it's not that way. God does the heavy lifting. God is the one that is guiding us, leading us. And we need to be able to say, God, I need your help. And you need to be the source right here, right now. He's a present help. He's a now help. God is now, today, a God that helps. And he tells us what happens when we take our eyes off God and the things that we can fear. Notice the passage. It says, Even though the earth be removed, mountains are carried in the midst of the sea, waters roar and troubled, mountains shake with swelling, life has its difficulties, life has its problems. One translation says, earthquakes come, mountains tremble, oceans roar, the mountains tremble at the rage. There are devastating things that happen in life today. Following Jesus does not eliminate them. It just means God's with you through them. Because there will be hard times. There will be difficult times. There will be unthinkable damage. And when we take our eyes off God, we forget that God is with us through it. And what do? We worry, we tremble, we quake. Our footings are shaken, and our faith begins to slip. Even though Right now, what's your even though? Even though I went through a separation, even though a rejection, even though a betrayal, even though the loss of one, even though a financial ruin, even though a loss of a job, even though sickness, even though a prognosis that's not favorable, even though, what's your even though? And here the sons of Korah say, even though these things will happen, we will not fear because simply God is. How do you not lose your faith? You remember that God is. In the midst of everything you're going through, God is. God is there. God is with you. God is your help. God is your refuge. But I do want to tell you this. I'm going to tell you, lose your faith. You know why you need to lose your faith? You need to lose your faith if your faith is in anyone else but Jesus Christ. If your faith is in some prominent person, it's in a preacher, it's in a musician, it's in your husband, it's in your wife. If your faith is in a person other than Jesus Christ, lose your faith. Because that person will fail, will all of a sudden stumble. That person will not be able to meet your expectations that you were wanting that person to fulfill. Your faith has to be in Jesus alone. Too many people today are trying to rationalize who God is based on their own thinking. They're looking at God as love, but God can't be then for judgment. God is accepting of everybody. God can't be narrow. God is this according to our thinking, therefore he can't do this. And what we end up doing is we end up rethinking God according to our own rationale. And then what happens is we lose the full image of who God is. We only have a part of God and not the fullness of who God is. Only a faith in Jesus Christ and who he is and what he's done for our lives through his death, burial, and resurrection can bring us into a right relationship with God the Father. When we remove parts of who God really is and we replace it with our ideology, our thinking of who God is, we can never have a right relationship with God. The Father cannot be torn apart into segments that I'll only accept this and not this. People lose their faith when they only want certain parts of the Father, but not the other parts. And we have to be those who will say, I will pursue after God who is in his entirety, accept him and who he is. God is the God that comes alongside and he comes to draw us near. And God says with open arms, this is who I am. And we say, well, God, I want that. Then God says, you have to take all of me. This is who I am. And when we portion out parts of God and we only want some of God, that's when we become disillusioned. And that's when we become say, well, God, I can't have faith in you then any longer. And it's because we have set the wrong parameters in our relationship with God. God is. You can't dethrone him. You can't make him into something he's not. It affects our relationship, not his. God is. Secondly, be still. To many of us, we think that when trouble happens, we've got to be the ones that make it work. I'm a fixer. Anybody here else a fixer in your family? You're the one that tries to make everything work. You're phoning everybody. Hey, I got the plan. I know how to make your relationship work. If you just listen to me, I can fix that all up for you. We're the fixers, right? We're the ones that have the list. We're the ones that have the ideas. We have the better way of making things work. Well, deep down, all of us are like that. Because when it comes to our relationship with even life and God, we think, well, if things aren't going right, I can fix it. I can make it work. And what do? We become more religious when we think that we need God to do something in our lives. Well, I'll just go to church more. I'll just read my Bible more. And we do it out of a religious attitude of making it right with God so that God then can make our things better. We're trying to fix it by all of a sudden doing the things that we think we need to do. And God says, no, that it's actually the opposite. He actually says, stop. Be still. Stop doing what you're doing and let me in. This word, be still, means to be weak, to let go, to release. In the context of battle, it might mean simply lay down your arms. Give up. Surrender. Quit. But yet our first response when we're going through difficulties and we're trying to have our faith just solid, we say, I'm going to do this. I will make this work. I will get it happen. And God says, no, why don't you just stop? Because you're actually making a mess of things. Let me do it. Surrender to me and let me fix what needs to be fixed. God says that the answer is be humble. Instead of striving and trying to make things better, simply give up, surrender. Coming over here, I had to, and I really did, had to go through stop signs, and I stopped. I didn't do a California roll. I stopped. I do try to do that even in our community. No, but seriously, I stopped. Because it says stop, you're supposed to stop. When you don't stop and you violate the stop, what happens when a policeman's happened to be by? There's a violation ticket, right? You pay a price. And so often in our own lives, we're always trying to fix it ourselves when God simply says stop. And when we don't stop, there's a violation. We make it worse. Our faith becomes reckless. Our faith becomes shattered. And all of a sudden, there's shaking going on. God says, would you just stop? Just stop. There's a few here that are also lifeguards. When I was a lifeguard, I did this for about 9 years through university and all those kind of things. But I remember going through my NLS course, National Lifeguarding Society, and we're paired up in our lifeguarding course, and we're learning how to rescue people. But to rescue people, you had to play a victim, right? So you have to have a victim and a rescuer. And the whole idea of the victim was to go into the deep end and where you can't touch and you're not allowed to use your skillful techniques or anything, but you're supposed to play drowning. So you go out there and you get so that you're slightly under the water, you're having a hard time breathing, you're thrashing your arms and you're calling out. And drowning victims really in real life don't look like that, but that's okay. But that's what we're playing, all right? So then the rescuer comes out and we go out to get the victim. And we've got a paddleboard with us or an object to keep us between us and the victim. Well, all of a sudden as we're coming towards them, we say, hey, I'm a lifeguard. I can help you. I can save you. And they're thrashing and they're going after it, and they're just, stop, I will save you. Stop, I will help you. Hard way. I got too close to the victim. And the victim, who all of a sudden had this surge of energy, reached out and grabbed me around my neck, hugged me, grabbed me, and all of a sudden both of us are just going down, 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 down. We're going down. And I'm thinking, this is pretend. I'm going down. I'm blue. I'm just, finally, the lifeguard just yells, or the instructor yells for him to let go of me. And finally, we come back up. And here's what we learned is that until they stop, you can't rescue them. Until they give up the fight, they can't be rescued, because as soon as you get into them, they will grab you and pull you down. It's a sense of poor analogy, because you can never pull God down. But the point of God wanting to save us is you got to stop so God can rescue you. And for you and I, it's so hard, but that is such the key for our faith to remain strong, is stop. Be still. Let God show up in our circumstances. We need to be those that are willing to stop moving, stop doing our stuff so God can step in and do what he needs to do. Too often, and it's been now 30-some years in the ministry, I've heard people say, that's it, I'm done. I'm walking away. I go, why? Well, God never showed up. God never did this. God never. And they have a long list of things that God never did. And they're like, I had to do it all. I had to be the one. I had to do this. I go, well, why didn't you just stop and let God do it? Too often, we're competing with God to rule our lives when God just says, stop. You can't have two rulers. He says, be still and know that I am God. I am God. And that's the third point. God is, be still, and simply know God. Know him. Not intellectually. Not academically. Don't be able to recite passages and just all of a sudden know the Bible. The devil knows the Bible. He recites passages. No, we got to know who God is. Well, the question is, well, how do we know God? Let me give you three ways that you can know God. The first way is salvation. So many people know about God, but do they really know God? How do you know God? How do you have an intimate relationship with God? Salvation. Will you entrust God for the forgiveness of your sin? We've all sinned. We've all fallen short of the standard of God. We fall short of our own standards. We know we fall short of God's standards. God, who is love and wants to pour his love out on all of us, How do we get that love? Well, we know God. We come into a salvation experience where we say, God, I surrender. I say, God, forgive me of my sins. Reconcile me as a child unto you, as a child of God. You be my Father. God, I yield my life to you, and I receive Christ's death as a sacrifice for my sins. God, thank you for eternal life. You know God simply by salvation, not by intellect, not by reading all the books, not by going to conferences, not by going to a church. You know God by receiving his salvation. That if you will believe in your heart that Christ died for you and you confess with your mouth that he is the Lord, he says you'll be saved. Every one of us. We know God by salvation. Secondly, we know God by reading his word. This is the mind of God revealed for us. It's God coming upon men of old, 66 books. All of a sudden for number of languages and 40 authors and 3 continents and I think 4 languages altogether, really. And all of a sudden, God says, hey, this is who I am. And we learn about who God is. Not by tearing out the pages we don't want, but by reading it all. And we say, this is who God is in his fullness. Then I can have a full relationship with God. I find it interesting that people will say, well, I'll pick and choose the passages I want. I'll believe this part of God in the Bible, but I won't believe this part. And we put validity and truth and integrity to these passages, but we're not going to put it to these. And we choose which ones we're going to have in the world today. And that's like you saying to me, Pastor, I want a relationship with you, but I'll only believe half of what you say. I'll only trust you on the things that I think you're telling me are right. We will never have a deep personal relationship when you only trust me for half the things I say. Could you imagine a spouse? Can you imagine children? Could you imagine workplaces where you want a relationship, but you only believe half of what they have to say? How do you have a relationship? How do you build together? How do you pull together in one direction? Well, the same thing with God. How do you say, well, God, I'll choose what's right and what's not. I'll pick and choose. It's either all or none. This is either the word of God or it isn't. 2 Timothy 3:16 says, all scripture is given by the inspiration of God and is profitable for doctrine, reproof, and correction. All scripture. And we say, God, your word is truth. I will read your word and learn about you, God. I want a full relationship. I want a full father-child relationship with you. And then thirdly, and here's the tough part, how do we get beyond just salvation and knowing God? I believe we have an experience called a wrestling match. Again, my grandsons, my oldest, Lennox, yeah, he looks at me and he goes, it's time to wrestle! He puts his big face on and goes his muscles and puts them like this and he says, I'm ready. And then he comes running at me and just puts his head right into me. It's like, whoa, stop it, let me get ready. But he just wants to wrestle. And then when we're wrestling, the whole idea is he tries to put me down, pin me down, and because he wants that wrestling match where he overcomes. Twice it says this. It says, the Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. The God of Jacob. Why not the God of Abraham? Why not the God of Isaac? Why is it the God of Jacob? In Genesis chapter 32, we're not going to turn to it. We read a story of about a man by the name of Jacob. He's on the run. He's on the run from his brother Esau, who swore to kill him. He says, I will hate you forever because you stole my birthright, and I'm going to come after you and kill you. And his mother heard this and told Jacob to flee and go away to Laban and pick up a wife and enjoy life type of thing. But all of a sudden, now their two are going to cross, Jacob and Esau. And Jacob is fearing for his life. And what Jacob does is he separates his family in a bunch of groups and tries to put him into safety, and he's all alone now with God. He's fearing for his life. It's midnight, it's cold, it's dark, and he's all alone. And God shows up. And it's Genesis chapter 32. It says an angel of the Lord, or an appearance of God really, comes and shows up and starts wrestling with Jacob. And there they begin to wrestle. And finally the angel, the appearance of God, the word comes out. He says, let me go. Daybreak's coming. And Jacob says, I'm not going to let you go until you bless me. And God says, then I'll bless you. He says, what's your name? Jacob, supplanter, deceiver. He says, no, you're now going to be called Israel, prince with God. There's a name change that happens. Then all of a sudden, God comes to Jacob, and he touches him on the thigh, right here. And he touches him, and all of a sudden his leg goes limp, and he can't wrestle anymore. And finally, he lets go of the angel. And that's when Jacob says, I've seen God face to face. How do you know God to a place of face to face where you know God and God knows you? You're so intimate with God daily. There's a humility and a surrender that you know who God is. You saw God face to face. How do you get to that place? You get into a wrestling match where you give up and you surrender and you tap out and say, God, I give up. You're Lord of my life. Jacob wrestled to the place of surrender. You learn to know who God is, not just by salvation, that starts it, not just by his word, that progresses us, but where we get to a place of surrender and we say, God, I know you so intimately, I tap out, I quit, I give up, you are the Lord of my life. How do we stop from having this pull in our faith to want to quit and give up when things are hard and difficult and bitterness comes and we just, no, I don't know why I follow God. I don't know why I pursue God. Why do I even go to church? Why do I even worship? Because God is. And there's a resilience in our faith that no matter who says what, no matter who falls, no matter who quits, who gives up, a parent, a spouse, no matter who in the realm of influential people in our Christendom, all of a sudden they quit giving up. They quit following Jesus. That doesn't move you because you know who God is. The testimony in you is God is. I can be still because I know God. I can surrender. I know God. When you know God, you won't lose your faith. When it's in Jesus Christ, your faith will be strong. You don't lose your faith when you're faced with life difficulties, when sorrows and hardship come. Instead, like the sons of Korah, your past doesn't define your future. You say, Jesus Christ is my only hope. In him I will trust. He is my refuge and my strength. He is a present help in a time of trouble. Even though, no matter what your even though is, you know you can trust who God is. In every trial, in every situation. Psalm 46, verse 1. God is our refuge and strength, of ever present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear, even though the earth be removed and although the mountains be carried into the midst of the sea, though its waters roar in trouble, though the mountains shake with its swelling. Selah. My challenge to you right now is Selah. Think about these words. Are these your words? If you were to write a psalm, if you were to write a song right now, what would the song be that you would write about God? Where's God in your life right now? What can you say about him? How can you confess in your faith, this is who my God is? And if you come up short in all these things, don't worry, because God's there to help you. All you need to say is, God, help. Will you help me through this journey? Will you help me in my faith? I want to have a strong faith. I want to have a believing faith. I want to have a faith that is resilient, resolute, confident. But I don't know how to get one. Ask God. Say, God, how do I get that? Too many people maybe in your life have given up on you, moved away from you, and you're sort of like all alone. God, I don't know what to do now. Simply ask God. God, how can I, in my place right now where I'm at, how can I have this kind of faith that Psalm 46 describes? Church is a community. It's amazing how the Psalm 46 talks about God's presence is in the midst of her, the city of God, community. If you're visiting with us today, we thank you for coming by. We encourage you to stay for the barbecue. But if you need community, if you need community of faith, believers that'll walk with you, that'll encourage you, consider this place as being a community for you. Very quickly, people say you need to believe before you can belong. Our heart is, no, you belong, and then believe with us. Belong, be part of community, then we will walk together in our beliefs. In our faith with Christ, we will walk together through Alpha, through Sunday ministry, through serving together. We will grow, and then we will become all that God has called us to be. I'm going to have the worship team come, and then after worship, we're going to give you some directions of what we need to do for the barbecue here today. But I really believe that Psalm 46 is sort of an answer to maybe some of the questions that's been going on in your heart and your life, some of the things that you're seeing out in the world today, and you're wondering, God, how do we stay above? How does our head stay above so we can be safe? Well, be still and know God and have the testimony that God is.